Part 4. Lolo. It is dangerous to be right in matters on which the established authorities are wrong. Voltaire. C-32. Lolo National Forest, Montana.
There's nothing here, Trey thought to himself. He thought this over and over again in the minutes he stood motionless in the empty valley, so much so that he began to doubt the accuracy of Dan's coordinates. The silence and darkness of the night had made Trey's walk through the small but dense wooded area between his van and this spot sufficiently creepy that the starlit valley felt positively welcoming in comparison. But as time ticked on, his mind grew fearful of every distant animal's call and every creak and snap of every nearby tree and twig. An alarm sounded on Trey's digital wristwatch at 2:27, alerting him that there was now only 1 minute until the moment of truth. His equipment, as much as he'd been able to carry in an oversized backpack and an additional briefcase-like container, had been fully set up for several minutes and was already recording. He had multiple cameras and microphones positioned close by, ranging from basic models to a recently purchased motion-tracking camera, which he had very high hopes for. In addition to those, he also wore a head-mounted night-vision camera and tightly grasped his primary handheld camera. Next to his watch, he wore another wrist strap, this one containing a single button which could remotely control the small but powerful floodlight he had placed 5 meters to his right. If the big thing happened in the sky, the floodlight would hinder the acuity of his footage. If it happened on the ground, the floodlight would prove worth its weight in gold.
This better be worth it, Dan.
Trey's eyes were on his watch as 2:27 ticked over to 2:28. After that, he didn't look down again. He counted steadily as the seconds ticked by, something he was very good at doing accurately. And by the 15-second mark, he noticed how much more quickly his heart was beating than it had been just moments earlier. Now that the time had arrived, he felt anticipation rather than impatience, but each passing second saw unwelcome doubts creep in as he couldn't help but start to wonder whether... And then, in response to an astounding flash of light low in the sky, Trey's jaw quite literally dropped as an altogether different kind of wonder took over. He kept his head perfectly still as he stared at the light source which had first appeared in his peripheral vision, and he fought a shaky hand to point his handheld camera towards the light. The flash had been far from total, and it neither blinded nor dazed Trey for even a second. Instead, it had been a localized flash in the distance, which heralded the arrival of a small and faint dot of light which was now zipping across the sky. From Trey's perspective, the dot appeared to be rising as it grew larger and brighter.
It's coming towards me, he dared to assume.
There was now no fear, only excitement. Dan hadn't sent him all this way for nothing, and he knew that if this really was what he was starting to think it might be, it would have been worth driving 1,000 times further than he had. By now, Trey had naturally stopped counting. If he had kept counting or glanced at his watch when the initial flash occurred, then again, when the dot came close enough for his eager eyes to make out some detail, he would have known that it took only 17 seconds for the precise shape of the craft to come into view. It was round, more discus than saucer, and although Trey's mind was shot, he could see enough detail on the underside to know that it was passing overhead lower than a plane. From the apparent scale, he inferred that its diameter couldn't be much greater than the length of an average passenger jet. It was also utterly silent, which he didn't appreciate fully in a moment when an incredible sight was the only sense he could focus on. These observational thoughts were brief and secondary to the childlike amazement Trey felt as his eyes and hand followed the passing craft. It was remarkable, incredible, awe-inspiring. No single word, nor even a collection of words, could come close to describing Trey's emotions. The one word which echoed in his mind more than any other had grown in prominence as the light approached, and he slowly came to realize that it really was what he thought and hoped. That it really was an alien craft. That it really was them.
even as the discus-like craft continued to arc into the distance before disappearing behind a line of trees, the detail of its underside remained imprinted in Trey's mind so clearly that he may as well have still been looking at it.
"I just saw a UFO," he thought to himself, smiling widely and freely.
He then paused to consider that it wasn't really all that unidentified, since he knew exactly what it was.
"I just had a close encounter."
A new thought then entered Trey's mind, less positive. Long before he ever met Dan McCarthy, Trey had followed up on several alleged UFO sightings in the hope of capturing a few seconds of decisive footage, which would have made him a comfortable man for the rest of his life. On one occasion, he had arrived at a supposed hotspot to find that another would-be eyewitness was already on the scene. That seemingly reasonable man, who Trey had barely thought about for several years, insisted that he had once seen and recorded a series of inexplicable lights in the sky over Denver, only to find minutes later that none of them showed up in any of his footage. The man's description of several bright and distant lights performing conspicuous maneuvers, as he had put it, didn't fit with what Trey had just seen. But recalling the rest of the man's experience, the experience of the incredible sight he witnessed not showing up in any of his footage, caused Trey's heart rate to soar all over again. Trey clicked his floodlight to life, instantly illuminating a small circle around him, then stopped recording on his primary handheld camera and navigated through its touchscreen menu to replay some footage. When he realized he would have to fast-forward through many minutes of nothing on this camera and that his motion-tracking camera would provide a far quicker answer by either reporting a tracked event or not, he moved towards it instead. He walked with his fingers crossed, hoping and praying that the footage would be there. If it was, nothing would ever be the same. If it wasn't, well, he didn't even want to think about that. Either way, his own perspective on the messengers would never be the same, and he would be sure to get an answer from Dan as to how he had known something was going to happen, where and when it did. He also knew that Dan would live up to his promise of making the exhausting trip to Lolo financially worthwhile. Dan always lived up to his promises, but that would do little to ease the crushing disappointment should the craft prove to have been unrecordable. Trey didn't want to think about this, but he couldn't help it. The will it or won't it be there question felt like the only thing in the world as it circled and spiraled in Trey's mind with each of his steps towards the motion-tracking camera. It circled and spiraled, faster and deeper, until something else blew it out of the water. This something else slackened Trey's jaw all over again and sent his fingers fumbling to both kill the floodlight and reactivate his handheld camera. For high in the sky, in roughly the same area from which the extraordinary craft had first appeared, a meteor-like trail was rapidly forming as something, some unknown thing, pierced through Earth's atmosphere and either plummeted towards the surface or burned up towards its death. Trey stood only a few feet from the motion-tracking camera and heard its small motor whirring as it turned to focus on the new visual stimulus its sensors had detected. That same new stimulus brought a new word to the front of Trey's mind as he focused his eyes and handheld camera on the ever-extending trail of fire. Kerguelen. Whatever was falling from the sky looked passably like the meteor which had exploded over Kerguelen, and although Trey was perfectly placed to capture unobstructed footage if this object exploded, it looked close enough for him to hope and pray that it didn't. To his relief, the object burned up very quickly and died with a fizzle rather than a bang, leaving a relatively short and unusually vertical trail in its wake. Trey felt confident that his readiness meant that he would have the best footage of the object's short-lived appearance within Earth's atmosphere. But he also knew that its brief brightness, combined with the prominence and longevity of its trail, would ensure that there would be plenty of eyewitnesses to turn it into another media event. And coming so soon after Kerguelen, questions were bound to be asked as to whether there might be a connection between the two incidents. But what would normally have been the biggest sighting of Trey's year was a distant runner-up to what had come moments earlier. And as soon as he was absolutely sure that no sonic boom was looming, he switched his handheld camera off again and finally got down to the all-important analysis of the motion tracking camera's footage. Trey Myers had seen a UFO. He had seen an alien craft, and nothing could ever take that away from him. But when it came to sharing it with the world, everything rested on whether his cameras had been able to capture the amazing sight of the low-flying vessel, or whether some kind of cloaking mechanism or electrical interference would result in the footage containing a heartbreakingly empty sky, or even an error message about corrupted data. Trey pushed a button to stop the motion-tracking camera's ongoing recording, and then held his breath as he instructed it to play back the recording from the first sky-based visual stimulus it had detected. On the small screen, a bright flash appeared and soon became locked in the center of the picture as the camera tracked its movement. "Don't disappear," Trey pleaded as the small light grew closer. "Please don't disappear." His heart rate reached all new levels with each passing moment until a throaty laugh of disbelief escaped his open mouth when the craft came close enough for the detail on its underside to come into clear visibility. Trey fell to his knees and threw his hands to his head in a display of unprecedented joy, casting a silhouette that might well have struck an outside observer as that of a man in despair rather than one who had just hit the jackpot. The global significance of what Trey had just recorded was not lost on him, but he couldn't help but think primarily of what it was going to do for him and his young family. While Emma and Dan had generously rewarded Trey's loyalty in the past, recent months had been lean for the Blue Dish Network business he ran with his wife. Their business model, based on being the first professionals on the scene of developing news incidents and selling their footage to major networks, was being squeezed tighter every day by the total market penetration of HD smartphones and the near-total spread of fast mobile internet, which allowed everyone to live stream such incidents from almost anywhere. But tonight, at Lolo, Trey wasn't just the first responder of the media world, he was the only show in town. He was too caught up in the joy of the moment to think much about why the messengers were back and how Dan had known they were coming, much less why their low flight over his head had preceded what looked like the arrival of another sizable meteor. For now, while Trey Myers gathered up his equipment and the priceless footage contained within it, only one thought rose high above the others in his mind. Thank you, Dan.